97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra. Welcome to the Art of Potential show. We have an amazing show in store for you today because we are going to be talking about a topic that everybody needs to know about, which is how to maximize your value to your employer. And we have with us a very valuable employee to Bank of America, Mr. Lee Champion. Hello, Lee.
Hey, Kristen. How are you doing?
Good. Now, Lee, you are the Senior Vice President of Banking Center Sales and Enablement for, like I said, Bank of America. It's a big title. I don't know exactly what it means. What I'd like for you to do, though, is kind of share with us how you got to where you are and give us an overview of what you do.
Sure. And thanks for having me. Often the case with very large companies and, you know, more and more, in at least where we are in this decade, with globalization and large corporations being more the norm is, you find they have, not only do they have every version of every department, but even within those departments, there's a lot of complexity.
Yep.
So what you end up having is highly matrixed, very diverse organizations that have to come together and work together to develop solutions. Because just, in most cases, sorry.
No, I was going to say just within the organization itself. It's like...
That's right. You know, so if you're in a company that has only 30 people, you know, you're going to have a marketing person, purchasing right. person, product person, legal, risk, et cetera. But if you have a business in multiple continents, multiple states, even in the United States, there's a lot of complexity there.
Yeah.
So my career, interestingly, I've been in financial services for about 16 years. And I guess I've probably fallen that I don't know if it's 50% of the population who don't know what they want to do when they leave college. And so, you know, if you don't know that you want to be a patent lawyer, right? You often leave school and you have a general idea of what you want to do, but not very precise. And so I landed in the financial services industry in the end of the dot-com bubble and was a finance major who, within 90 days of joining, at the time, Nations Bank, found myself developing databases with PL/SQL. So, you know, at the time, it was more a function of where the demand was.
Right.
And at the time, you know, there was much need for people to build systems, information systems. And so, really, more by accident, I think, than anything else, started out my career in finance that way.
How funny. So 90 days, you're building computer code.
That's right. Which says a lot about, I think, what your mindset needs to be when you go into leave college, is that
right.
be adaptable and be prepared for the unexpected.
Right. Finance major, yes, let's put you on the computer, go. Yes,
correct.
Thank you very much. May I have another?
But, I think, my career has probably not been very traditional, and it's actually become a bit of a talking point around career development in that, you know, instead of going vertically and always more sort of myopically focusing on going vertically, be conscientious enough to think about lateral moves as being ways to make forward progress.
Which is a great strategy. So you're trying to learn a lot about things in different departments than the one you're starting in.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in my case, I learned a lot over a 4 or 5 year period when I did some consultancy work, but actually missed really being close to the business, which was what I liked about finance to begin with. So, you know, made a pretty big step, and I will say it was a bit of a scary step, leaving what I was good at and built competency at, and went into a more finance role, like literally doing the numbers type of assignment, and it was very, very different. But what I found was, you know, the very sort of diversity of thinking that I developed in the technology space really allowed me to differentiate myself when I got into finance.
Oh, interesting. So it became your strength.
Yeah, well, to a degree, maybe not so much a strength as much as another way to differentiate yourself. Because I would say at the time it was my strength, but it quickly became, a second ability, if you will. So, so not only do you bring a different perspective to the conversation, so there I am in a finance organization where you've got people that have been in finance for 20 years.
Right.
And that's what they know. And
right.
That's the way they think. And so being able to provide a different perspective to decision-making, whatever it may be, becomes an asset. And it's an asset for you as an individual as well, because I don't know if the right analogy is, you know, whether it be groupthink or what, but you're able to break out of the mode of thinking that everybody mm-hmm. else is in.
Well, you have a different paradigm you're operating from. You just see the world very differently.
That's right. And by the way, I mean, the whole notion of diversity as it regards, you know, the bottom line of business really is just that, is that you don't have blind spots. And you're able to think very broadly from many different perspectives at once. And most humans can't do that, right? So,
right. So
diversity broadly as an organizational construct is useful in that regard. And I would submit from a career perspective, moving laterally creates that perspective for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good for two reasons. One, it's a value add to your employer. They know that you have a more diverse way of viewing the business. And then likewise, as an individual, you become more self-aware. You know what you're good at, what you're not, what you've excelled at, and what you don't.
And you can let those go, those things that you don't excel at.
That's right. So, and the other thing that I would say, you know, and so after finance, I moved into more channel-specific and product-specific roles. But there again, I even found that my finance experience was invaluable on the business side. And so, maybe financial services is a little different than other industries, but,
right.
You know, if you really want to understand the product, you really want to understand the economics of the business, if you've been in finance, it's kind of like being a locksmith, be a thief. You know how the products work. You know what how the business economics work. And it, again, adds more perspective and
more
a different perspective to
decision-making. Yeah, and a depth of understanding. Yeah, totally.
That's right.
Okay, so you went on this. Now you're at, and it sounds like you got a lot of the experience while you were working for the bank.
Yes.
Yeah. So then you've survived, if I'm correct, you've survived multiple layoffs from the bank at this point.
Well, I mean, like most industries, right? I mean,
right.
Since, let's call it 2007, just about, you know, with many few exceptions, all industries have been in a contractionary mode.
Yep.
Either because of just the prevailing economy, regulatory environments or exposure in different markets that has just made it difficult to do business. So yes, to answer your question, it has been a trying, you know, five or so years. I used to say I was really looking forward to 2013, and I think everybody's still looking for that year when we feel like we've really fully made the turn, if you will,
uh-huh.
from an economic perspective.
So do you think your making lateral moves on your way to building your career has been one of the things that's helped you in your particular corporate culture survive and be of added value to the company?
Yes, I think. Again, if you think about more the norm with very large companies, being more the norm than not, that ability to really understand business end to end is increasingly becoming more and more difficult. So again,
yes.
I've got a good friend that works at a very small retail goods company. They have 30 employees. There's no mystery as to what's going on necessarily between the different departments and the groups. But those type of businesses, you know, if depending on what you want to do, right, in particular if you want to work with a larger company, that complexity of the organization is going to be a thing. And yes. You know, I think I've even seen articles recently that said, you know, the typical CEO these days is not a lifer that's been in that an executive role their entire career. They necessarily have to understand the business very broadly, have to understand the regulatory environment, the financial environment, compliance, as well as what is it like for the front end customer. And you just can't do that from one role or one assignment very well.
No, you would. It seems like if you were in compliance, you would just know compliance. That's just such an overwhelming topic in and of itself that then to turn around and have to learn a bunch of other things. So, but just to recap here, because I think we hit on a lot of good points, as we started talking about you, but we ended up talking just in generalities about how people can make themselves more valuable. In your case, what it sounds like you did is you took lateral moves that were areas of interest for you. And in doing so, you learned your strengths and weaknesses, what you bring to the table. You were able to get a more global sense of the company. So you have some depth and breadth. You have both, which is a really nice thing, though, you know, obviously you're not an expert in one particular area. And it sounds like that has really helped you to survive the bank as it's gone in, like most companies, morphed into moving into the new economy as it is. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we can't, you know, assume that all companies are the same. And there's right. many companies that, you know, you literally can't get, you can't get that next best assignment until somebody leaves the company. So that for sure still exists. but you know, I think we'll find that more and more, you know, companies are going to expect a lot of their employees. And so that ability to be adaptable, flexible, self-aware, and I don't want to say it's like a utility player, because that's not what I'm implying. But having like a genuine understanding of the business end to end becomes extremely valuable.
We're going to take a break on that. And when we come back, I want to talk about some of the psychology behind that, because that is a tough mindset to adapt to. So we're going to take a break right now. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment to go and check us out on the web at artofpotential.com.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with Lee Champion. Lee is a senior vice president over at Bank of America, and we're talking about how to make yourself an incredibly valuable employee to your employer. And one of the things that Lee just shared with us is that his career had a lot of lateral moves. So, Lee, would you say when you were doing your lateral moves, you were trying to find out about the bank, or was it also an opportunity for you to find out about yourself?
That's a good question. Well, I'll admit that probably within my first 2 years of working, I remember I had a manager that said, you need to have a plan. You need to have a 2, 5, 10-year plan on your career, where you want to go, et cetera. And I dutifully went off and wrote that plan. And one of the things I noticed immediately was, you know, 3 years out, it got really fuzzy really quickly.
It's a good manager, though.
right. You know, I think the honest answer is that I was trying to be as conscious and deliberate about my career as I could, but to some degree, it evolved as I progressed. And some of the things that I found was, you know, things that I did well at, I started to pick up on those patterns. And things that I thought I was good at and thought I could be successful at, I started to find the pattern there that I didn't really like it and I wasn't so good at it.
Oh, interesting.
So you know, what I would say is that, you know, and there's a great article by Frederick Hertzberg that kind of speaks to this, but, you know, the ultimate version of success, you know, if you don't play the lottery, you're not independently wealthy or about to retire, is you get up in the morning and you have some sense of personal satisfaction of your work. And usually what I've found, both for myself as well as hiring people and watching others' careers progress, is they're very clear on what they're good at and what they're not. And you usually find people that are successful through their strengths. And there's a quote, and I don't know if it's Drucker or Deming or who, but it's something like, you know, maximize your strengths and make your weaknesses relevant. And irrelevant doesn't mean you go train the heck out of something. It means that you either do shore up that shortcoming, or you make it literally irrelevant by removing it from the equation.
Right. You know, bring someone else in to do it, yeah.
Bring someone else in to do it, or don't take that job that would force you to do that. And be upfront with, you know, your manager about your next job assignment in that regard. So, you know, one of the things that happened, I guess I should say, is I not only did I start to get a very keen sense of what I wanted to do, what I was good at, and how I could apply my strengths, but I could also adapt to how the business was changing as I built knowledge and understood the dynamics of the industry and what I thought was changing. You start to feel like you actually have some control of going in a direction that's a win-win for you and the company, meaning you have some really good things to bring to bear given the emerging needs and demands of the business.
So are you at this point, I mean, I'm just trying to visualize this in my head. You're in the corporation, you're getting tinges about what the future may hold. When you start to get those tinges, are you then actively researching where the company's going? Are you saying to yourself, I'm part of this company, so I'm going to be the one that takes the company to the next level? What's your mindset in some of this?
Well, so there's career planning, there's learning about yourself, and then there's what you're doing in the moment. And I think, you know, one of the things I've observed others do is when they're in the middle of their current assignment or their current role, they're asking their manager and they're asking others, well, how do I get to that next job? Can you tell me what I need to do? And my advice often is that's good to have a goal and, you know, something to focus on, but the main priority is the assignment that you're in.
Okay.
And you need to, and this is a way of answering your question. Your next assignment is always going to be a function of your performance in the current role, and for a variety of reasons. Number
right.
one, you're going to show others what you're really made of. So when you're genuinely committed to your assignment, when you, you know, bring your best self to that job. It may not feel like it, but everybody notices. And I've had other people say things like, you'll earn your next assignment through your current job. And I think that's very true.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The other thing I would say is particularly, you know, at least for me, there are rarely points where people are successful by themselves. And there, it's rare, particularly in corporate roles, that corporate America, that, you know, one person actually is the impetus that got something done. I mean, make no mistake, it takes dozens of people to do things. And so your ability to work with those 12 people, mm-hmm. your ability to engender followership with those people, whatever that may mean, they notice that. And so one of the best ways to your next assignment is to really prove yourself in your current role. Build a relationships with leaders,
yep.
build a relationship with peers, and you will find that when you move on to another project, another assignment, they come back and ask for your help. Or they come back and ask right. for your advice.
He or she did such a good job with that. Let's call him in.
That's right. And so and that opens all sorts of entrees. I'm sure you've had discussions about just networking in general, but what networking really looks like on the ground is just that. It's working with people and helping them. And one of the things I learned early on was there's no better way to really prove your worth than to fully and shamelessly give credit to others. Because the fact is, you wouldn't, you know, no team is successful because of one person, right? It's
right.
because of everyone. So, you know, showing that recognition and acknowledgement of others, shamelessly giving recognition to others when it's due, that all comes back to you in spades, both with building relationships, and I'm talking about genuinely doing these things, right? But
right.
that will spawn so many opportunities, so many, you know, conversations about another role. Which I suspect is another conversation you've had, which is when you want another role, it you know, that often those processes are so opaque that, you know, you don't know when the role is available or
right,
who's the
right.
hiring manager. And the secret is it's those who have really done a fantastic job
yeah.
that are usually asked about that. So
right. And they'll even write the job description around the person they want to hire. Sometimes I'm not sure that people, you know, you have a certain skill set, but, you know, corporations will, if you're on a management team and looking for something and you need someone that you've identified, there'll be special things that pop up on the job description.
The question I often get is, how do I know those jobs are out there? And the other one is, people all often tell me, this is the exact role that I want. How do I get that job? And, you know, my response to the second question is, and again, this, you know, different industries, different companies may vary, but usually what I say is you may know of one assignment that you really want, and you may have really done the math on how it lines up to your strengths, your weaknesses, et cetera. But my guess is there's 9 other assignments out there that you don't even know exist, that you would be equally as good at and find equally as satisfying. And so one of the things I tell people to make sure you're constantly working on is, you know, just that. It's like, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are your accumulated or accrued knowledge areas and areas of expertise? And what are your practical experiences on projects or work that you would put on your list of assets? And what you do is when you're having conversations with that network that you're building is you don't ever pin yourself into this is the job I ultimately want. What you do is you're able to, you know, quickly articulate what you bring, what your value is,
what you bring to the table.
That's right. And what happens is people will tap you for an assignment you never thought existed. And when they tell you what the job is, you're like, well, I'd be great at that.
Right. It's right up my alley.
Yeah. So I think, you know, it's one recommendation is don't be so sure that you know exactly what job you want, because you probably either haven't learned enough about yourself or you haven't written down your sort of balance sheet of value that you bring that can be applied to other assignments that don't know they exist. And then the other thing is just, you know, always, I mean, your best path and entree to another role that you really like is probably the job you're in.
As long as I'm just trying to think for people who are in an organization where they're not looking to move up or around that organization, it's a little bit different, I think, if you're trying to move from place to place. But nonetheless, your network, who had worked with you at your previous organization, is going to be the best group to talk to, who would have the entree. That makes sense.
That's right. Yeah, and maybe a topic for a different discussion, but you know, I always tell people to, you know, to build your own board of directors, and you'll slowly accumulate a group of people that you go to. And those people should necessarily be in the company that you're at as well as at other companies.
No, and that's, we actually had another guest on here, Charlotte Post, who said the same thing. She has a personal board of directors, and it ranges. She has, you know, personal people like her minister, and then she has corporate people at the corporation she works for, Cisco, that, you know, work there, who she actively seeks advice on different topics. I think that's wonderful advice for all of us. One question, it does sound like you're constantly vetting yourself. It's one of the undertones I hear in the conversation. Are you writing down examples? Like, is it an actual process or is it an intellectual process? Or do you have a piece of paper where you say, okay, this is the project I worked on, these are the strengths I used, this is how they manifested in this particular project, so that you have talking points later when you do go back and if you're involved in another project to say, this is how I performed here?
Yeah. So I would say something like, one, I've been very fortunate to have some really fantastic managers over my career that were always very, very good at the performance conversation, quote unquote, and being very thoughtful about how it's framed up. And then likewise, the company that I work for today takes very seriously the whole notion of career development and performance measurement. And so we do have a formal framework that's used, and so it's certainly that, and it's all the usual suspects. You know, you have a plan. You have personal development goals. You have a development plan. So there's a formal aspect there. But to answer your question, yes. I mean, I've always maintained, my own personal version of that that I've accumulated. I've still got my 5-10 year plan from like 13 years ago. So I still have all that out, and I pull it out every once in a while to look at and laugh at.
I was going to say, do you laugh at it, or are you like, wow, I'm right on target?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a laugh. your level of consciousness, if it's something that you spend the time on, and I would encourage everyone, I mean, if you're not spending time on it at least every quarter meaningfully, you really ought to put that on the calendar.
Okay, so every quarter is every 3 months, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and I mean, you know, your thinking in December will be different in March, and you change it, and that's fine. But, you know, keeping a running list of major things that you've done, job assignments, I do keep all that. I do go back and reference it. Some people do it via their resume. I don't know if I'd recommend that, but
No, it would get overwhelming. Hopefully it would get overwhelming because you'd have so much material.
Well, that's funny you say that. Yeah, I mean, my first crack at it, it was overwhelming. And I've been constantly forced to not dumb it down, but to simplify it. To be very simple with it.
And then from that, you can, you know, go off in different directions. Because it sounds like the core concept, and then you'll have multiple examples and multiple layers of examples on how that core concept is manifested in your work.
That's right.
So that's, I think, really good advice. And the other reason I'd recommend that we all do that is because time goes so quickly and we all get caught up in what we're doing. And it just seems like yesterday we were in January and yet we're looking at March, or, you know, it just seems like yesterday we were in whatever month. So looking at it every quarter would definitely keep your feet to the fire for your own personal growth, which I think is a great way to do it. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I do want to talk a little bit about if you are in one of those companies who's doing that is going through the downsizing model, what are some of the things that are going on behind the scenes in corporations, various ones, as they look for building themselves to move into the next version of what they're going to be. So we're going to talk about that when we get back. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM. WCHL.
Welcome back. This is the Art of Potential Show, and I am talking with Lee Champion. Lee is a senior vice president over at Bank of America. And we're talking in general. Lee's worked for a bunch of different corporations, but one thing that he does have experience with that some of us also do is seeing an organization go through layoffs. So, Lee, my question to you is, what goes on behind the scenes in the various corporations as they're looking at approaching a layoff cycle?
That's a great question. Well, listen, I would say that it probably doesn't matter how big the company is, the size or the complexity, you know, at its core, that exercise is going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say something like, it's no different than a family of four.
Right.
You know, at the end of the month saying, you know, we have expenses at some level and we have income at another level. And there's really two options. You go out and get another job and increase income.
Yep.
That's to say revenue.
Yep.
Or you decrease expenses.
Right.
And ideally you do a little bit of both. The past, our past economic cycle, has been very different. And it's been one where a lot of businesses have been forced to focus on expense almost exclusively. So there's a bit of, a bit of uniqueness to the past cycle, but, expenses come in all forms, not the least of which is the intellectual capital of the people, but to answer your question, there's, you know, a very deliberate focus on a strategy, and hopefully there's a plan, a multiple year plan or approach and framework for it. But, you know, as far as it goes for people, I mean, it's usually you're looking for an expense number, and candidly, it's no different than if you're handed money and asked to grow revenue, right? So that's the opposite version of it, where someone says, here's $5 million, go invest it and grow revenue for me. Picking the number of people, the type of people is candidly the same as if you're going the other direction. It's just a completely different sensation. So you're looking for people that can do what you need them to do. I would say that one aspect in a contractionary environment is, and this one I've observed to be very difficult, is the change is arduous, the change is uncomfortable. And while I say that they're inverses of one another, that difference is tremendous than growing the business. So to be very straightforward, those who are willing to be very adaptable, and I don't say that as some kind of cliche for they're just yes people, but you have to be mentally prepared to deal with the fact that things are going to change. It's going to be uncomfortable. And you have to grind through that discomfort. And those types of people often prevail.
So you would say personality does end up playing out, assuming all else is equal. There is a value to having an adaptable personality and not one that complains about everything.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, listen, everybody when they wake up in the morning makes a choice to be optimistic or pessimistic, and they make a choice to bring the best they can to whatever they have in front of them.
So you make a decision every morning, decide if you're going to be happy today or decide if you're not going to be. I mean, really, you do.
Yeah, because the reality is it's not fun for anybody.
Right.
when you're in a contractionary mode. And I would say both for your own personal well-being as well as if you're, you believe like you're in that type of environment and are, building your own approach to being successful, being adaptable. And I suppose when you say it that way, it does become a characteristic that's kind of useful and necessary, which is you can stay optimistic when it's not. That is a trait that becomes very, very important because the team has to get to the other side, right?
Right.
That's the whole point.
Well, and it seems like you may have at some point to make a decision, and I'm just speculating here because I really haven't seen this, but it does seem like it might come up where you have someone who might have a stronger set of skills, but working with them and knowing how they react to change puts everybody on eggshells around them. And then you have someone whose skill set may not be as strong, but is able to build bridges or carry on or, kind of keep going. And if you had to pick between those two, it almost seems like you go with the one who is, willing to carry on with a halfway decent attitude, because that's who you're spending your every day with.
That's right. And I think it was the Jack Welch model, right? The four leaders. And there's that leader who delivers on results, but they're not bought in, and that's a leader that at least in the Jack Welch model would not persist either. So it is about the commitment. It is about the attitude that comes. So it's said differently. It's not just the performance.
So do you ever, like, when you've seen or see layoffs occur, see any desensitization to the people around you or around others? Because, like, everyone's trying to hold on to their source of income. And it seems like that would create some type of psychological environment in the business that would be difficult to be around.
For sure that exists. I mean, humans go through such a range of emotions with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can be in a defensive mode or a more aggressive mode for survival. So yeah, all those above absolutely plays out.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, I want to know from you, Lee, what are some things you are looking for when you hire? What are some differences you've seen when people you've interviewed from different cohorts, different age groups? Kind of get a good sense for people looking for work right now on how they can present themselves in the best possible way. So you are listening to The Art of Potential Show. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am talking with Lee Champion, and we will be right back.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra. You are listening to The Art of Potential show, and I am talking with Lee Champion. Lee is a senior vice president over at Bank of America. And Lee, what I want to ask you, because you've hired, how many people would you guess you've hired in all the different jobs and corporations you've worked for?
A lot. I don't think I've ever kept track of it.
Yeah.
At some point, I quit counting the number of people I'd interviewed at around, somewhere north of 300. I think I just quit tracking it, but it's a lot.
It is a lot. So we're going to call you an expert for that reason, because, you are. Standout interviews. What have been some of your standout interviews that you still remember, and what made them stand out?
Face-to-face, the physical presence and just the energy of the individual is always undeniable. So yeah, I would say it's almost some of the nonverbals and the just sort of the innate qualities of the individual that come across. But you know, I think all human beings notice. They may not be very conscious of it, but those are things that really stand out. Those individuals that just exude confidence in a very genuine way, in a balanced way. But just you know, they're thoroughly prepared for the conversation. They're thoroughly qualified, which tells me a couple things. You know, one, that they had enough presence of mind to know that the assignment is a good fit for them. You know, I always tell people that it's so much harder for the interviewee to figure out if the job is a good fit for them than it is the person making the interview. And so seeing that in an individual, that there's a real genuine fit there, because they recognized it, it just sends a lot of very positive feedback that this is a good fit.
So a question for you. One of the interview questions, and I don't know if you use it, but a lot of people do, is what are your weaknesses? Or, you know, some variation of that. Have you used a question like that? And if so, I'm just curious, what are some good weaknesses that people are open and honest and genuinely have, which don't completely turn off an interviewer?
Yeah, that's a yes, it's definitely a question I've asked. You know, I think there's two versions of success of responding to that. One is the, I guess I would call it the typical kind of dodge, where you put out some benign sort of weakness and talk through it in an intelligent way. That's definitely not a big check mark in the positive column, but it's neither a detractor.
Right.
I don't know that I've ever had anyone really just come out and just say that they were really bad at something. Most people, you
it's
find
not a good
that,
strategy.
Not really, unless it genuinely is not relevant for the job. But you know, most people allude to things that get them sidetracked, either too much into details or overly focused on things that don't matter, or maybe the way that they communicate and lead with others and I would say the one version that is a very positive there is if they're able to, you know, display some amount of self-awareness.
Right.
And I think the and there is, and in this, and the, you know, the experiential sort of questions, you know, work well with this too, is that they give you the real examples of where they saw it, they caught it, and they're aware of it, and this is how they address it.
Right. So it's no longer an issue.
It's no longer an issue. And even better, they can see it coming. They're aware of it. They watch it. They observe it. They let it start to happen, and they're able to either diffuse it, sidestep it, or what have you. And so I have had people describe those situations. And, that's a big win, right? Because the self-awareness is tremendous, much less the discipline to kind of articulate it and manage it. So
I love that. And that's something that any person who's out there interviewing should definitely keep in mind. That's a great response to that question. So what advice do you have for people who are interviewing? I mean, what would be your overall advice if you were to sit down with someone that you knew, you know, was going to interview for a corporation? How would you advise them to put their best foot forward?
Well, I mean, I think I said a few things a moment ago. You know, there's a lot of pre-interview things that happen. You know, if you know the hiring manager, if you know something about the assignment, so that could change the context pretty tremendously, I suppose. But, you know, I would say something like this, you know, the President of the United States prepares thoroughly for his speeches, even if they're pretty benign. So you can never be too prepared to understand the situation that you're going into, whether it's internal or external.
Mm-hmm.
So highly encourage that. I mean, and when I say be prepared, I mean, that really means everything. I mean, understand the culture, norms, et cetera.
Even within, and I just want to bring this up because some organizations are siloed. I don't know about where you are, but some of the other folks I've talked to. So the culture in one department can be very different than the culture in another department.
Yeah. If you have insight into that, I mean, you should absolutely be taking advantage of that. Candidly, if it's a detractor to you, it's another part of the input into the decision-making process for yourself. Meaning if you don't think there's a fit there. So that type of preparation is sort of table stakes, I would say.
Great advice. Lee, thank you very much for joining us for the Art of Potential show. We really appreciate having you on. You've been a wonderful source of information. You have just listened to the Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment and check out our website, artofpotential.com, and see some of the cool things we are up to with college and career coaching.